You might think that it's all about you and I'm a terrible cook, and then you don't cook and it's a cycle.
Debbie, I want to thank you for taking time to be here this morning. You just came in last night, right?
Last night. What time zone am I in right now?
Tokyo, so you don't know.
I don't know.
You
have
no clue.
I don't know. What did my body know?
Where'd you fly in from? Where'd you come? You came in from JFK, you said.
I flew in from JFK, but I started in Boston. I live in Boston, Massachusetts.
All right.
So, yeah.
Is this your first time to Japan?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, with the light of day, it is beautiful. We saw it at night with the lights, and
I'm
excited to explore. Yeah.
Well, that's beautiful. You have how long are you going to be here?
Just a week.
Just 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a packed week, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. We have a bunch of things planned.
And you came in with your friend Dawn.
Yep, she's here for work. I convinced her. I didn't have to twist her arm too hard, but let's do a few days before you start work, and then once she works, I'm off on my own.
All right. Let's start. Where were you born?
I was born in New York, in Brooklyn.
Okay. Do you have siblings?
I do. I am the oldest of three.
And what are the two younger ones?
My sister is the middle child, and then my brother is the baby, because he's 12 years younger than I am.
12 years younger.
Mm-hmm.
Your sister's how many years difference?
5 and a half.
So you're not that close with them, or you were, or you
I'm
at
not,
the beginning?
No.
You're not. You know, I have
it's
a theory
hard,
about
right?
that. I have
yeah.
a theory. I have a theory that if the children are separated more than 4 years,
mm-hmm.
usually 3 or more years, unless the parents really knew how to parent, the kids won't be that close.
Yeah.
Just because of sibling rivalries and all these other things,
yeah.
having different friends.
Right, you're in different
yeah.
age. Like
That's
I
right.
was going off to high school. And my brother was in,
nursery.
Grade school, nursery
right.
school, and then I was off at college and then didn't come back. So we didn't really have that kind of relationship. We have more of a mentor relationship now.
Like, well, they ask questions, yeah.
Yeah, because he now has small children and mine are out of the house.
What about your sister?
My sister has a daughter, and she lives in New York near my parents.
Okay.
So we see them quite often.
Well, you do.
Charlotte is her daughter. She just gave me a birthday card that said, from your favorite. The card itself said, this is from your favorite, and it was said, inside said niece, but she wrote person in big letters across the middle of the card, which was hysterical.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
What about mom and dad? How are they doing?
Good. They just got off of a cruise for my parents, my mother's 80th birthday. I'll say it live.
She's going to love that.
She's going to hate it. But the fact is, she's 80, and they are traveling and vibrant and mm-hmm. energetic. So.
And your dad? How old is he?
He is younger. He's turning 79 next month.
Almost, huh? She knew she was doing
that. Yeah.
And they stayed together all the way through?
They did.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And you're married with three children? Or
yeah.
Three children.
Yeah.
Why do we always tend to make the kind of families we grew up in?
That was not my plan.
It wasn't your plan at all?
My plan was I didn't want the middle child. I wanted to have 4 kids. But then I had my children close together, so when I was having my third, my oldest was turning 4.
Okay.
And she transitioned into some sort of child that I couldn't handle. She was tantruming and bossy and all the things where I was like, babies are so much easier than this. I can't have another one. Because then I'm going to have to deal with this.
The first
for
two
longer.
Are what? The first two are?
A girl. It's girl, boy, girl.
Girl, boy, girl. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
But are they close?
Yeah. Yeah. The older one. So my older one is off in New York City as a musical theater performer. And so she's not around as much. And then my other two are very close.
Oh, that's good. That's good. All right. So what brings you to Japan?
I am obsessed with food and food from all over the world and exploring areas through their food. It's actually part of what I do for my business. And so this is actually not only for personal reasons, but I'm kind of exploring, could I bring a group of foodie travelers with me here,
mm-hmm.
Aside from the distance? Mm. So far, so good. We had an amazing dinner last night. So,
okay. But tell me, what's your business?
So my business is called The Effortless Kitchen,
okay.
and it started as a personal chef business, cooking in people's houses. And then when the pandemic happened, I shut it down and turned it into a virtual cooking class business. So I teach people how to cook.
Mm-hmm.
They're in their kitchens learning how to cook. And I find that it's better than doing personal chef work because...
It is?
it's much better for me because I have some interaction instead of being by myself in someone's kitchen. And then I'm teaching them what I know so that they can be empowered to cook for themselves. There's a lot of people out there who need help, who think that they can't cook or they don't like to cook, and being in a class with me makes them feel more comfortable and confident, and then they can go out and do their own thing.
And you've been doing this for more than 3 years now, because you said you started...
The personal chef work started in 2019, so it was a pretty quick transition over to the virtual world. And
how long you started? 2019 is when you started.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, eight months later, I was doing something else, and so I do classes for individuals. Mm-hmm. As we do group classes, and then I started doing corporate work, and so I find that it really helps companies with their team building and employee engagement type of activities. And it was much more prevalent in the early phase of the pandemic, where companies couldn't have their holiday party, they couldn't have their summer outing, so they would come to me. But companies are still geographically spread out and they still need my services. And I've really broadened into the workplace wellness market, because what I do is teach healthier cooking so that it really has a place in the health and wellness sphere. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not only do I teach cooking classes for companies, but I also lead lunch and learns, like different talks about healthier eating, how to cook when you're not comfortable, how to stock your pantry.
Wait. How do you cook when you're not comfortable? What does that mean?
How to get comfortable in the kitchen and how to create joy in the kitchen. Yeah.
I've never really cooked. Something I'm thinking to do the latter years of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to get around. I don't know if I really want to go into it full force, or do I want to just do a little bit and surprise people? I haven't decided.
Who cooks now?
My wife.
So
she does. She always has.
Yeah. So a lot of times I find that if there's a partner who cooks, the other person doesn't have to.
Right, that's okay. No. I told her from the beginning. She knew what I was like. What got you into the food area? You're the oldest daughter. Did you cook at home?
I did. I learned to cook from my mother and my grandmother. So I have a Jewish Italian family.
Okay.
So my mother is the Jewish side, and my grandmother, my dad's mother, was the other really good cook in the family.
So you're really Jewish then?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. That is how it works.
That's how it works?
Yes. But my Italian grandmother was very much a part of our lives, and we did Sunday dinner at her house every week. And so I learned to cook the Italian dishes from her without a recipe.
Okay.
She never made her own pasta, but it was her sauce that was, and her meatballs and everything else that she did. So I became obsessed with food at a young age because I realized, like, it was time nice to spend time with her in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it was time around the table with family and everybody was enjoying themselves. So I, you know, see it as a form of pleasure and enjoyment and connection with the people that you love. So that's
so it's really important in your family.
Yes.
During that time. Everyone had to come together at the same time.
Yes.
You sat down.
Yes.
There were no cell phones then, but no other distractions. And did you say a prayer when you got started?
No, I'm not from a religious family, so no.
Oh, they weren't really. Did everyone just eat? Time to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Go for it.
Mm-hmm.
But you did.
You better
together,
eat because Grandma worked all day making this meal.
Right.
And you better eat a lot of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, then how'd you keep yourself in shape then?
I don't know. Good genes. I do like to indulge, like, because some of that food can be heavy, but I do like to eat kind of healthier foods. I always have. So.
So what did you do? When did you convert into that? Or did you always do that from the beginning? Eat healthy. How would you know?
I was raised that way pretty much.
Oh, really?
My parents eat very healthy.
Okay.
So it was just the way we ate at home. So
now,
I didn't
qualify
really
that
know.
For me. When you say healthy,
it's
healthy
not what
for you might be healthy for someone else.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. When people think of healthy, like I find it hard when I like market my business as healthy eating. People have this idea of healthy, of being like salads.
Vegetarian.
And nothing else.
Right.
Vegetarian food is great. But that's all that people think of. For me, healthy is having a good balance of food on my plate. Knowing that I'm getting my protein and my carbs, and you know, I'm not going to get technical
with any of that.
Okay. Definitely meat.
Right.
Not a lot of like heavy sauces, and
Now, when you
not
say
a lot of fried food.
But when you say heavy, do you mean heavy as far as a lot of sugar?
A lot of butter.
A lot of butter. It's the butter.
A lot of that butter.
That makes it heavy, okay.
For me.
All right.
Yeah. Makes it delicious, so a little bit of it is great.
Right, right.
But I don't do a lot of fried foods.
You have to change your taste buds, though. If you're used to having
if
heavy...
If you're used to
that's
it.
That's right.
Right, right. And that's the hard thing. That's the hard thing to kind of help people transition. But to see that you can make something that has a little bit less of those things in it and still taste really, really good. Like, I want the food to taste amazing. I don't want it to be like, this is health food, this is bland food. That's not what I do, because I'm really about the experience of dining and eating and being enjoyable.
Right.
So I want it to be enjoyable for everybody else. And also, my palate's different from everybody else's palate.
Of course.
So I want people to cook to their palate, which is the great thing about doing the virtual classes, because they're actually cooking. And they can modify it.
Mm-hmm. Did you write a book?
I did write a book, yes. I was teaching classes for about 2 years, and a couple people who come to my class regularly kept going in a binder, I have your book, because they had all my recipes. I have your book, and I'm like, oh, I have a book. So I wrote a cookbook.
Wait. Oh, I see what you mean.
They had a collection of all my recipes in their own little binder.
I was confused.
I'm
thinking that you'd already, you did a book, and you'd forgotten you'd done a book, and I've got your book.
They're like, I got a book. Because it wasn't a plan of mine. I didn't think, like, I should write a cookbook. But I had been developing these recipes for two and a half years at the point that I wrote the book. So I basically had a collection of recipes that I'd been teaching, so why not share them with everybody? So I put them together in a book. And this is for you. It's called The Effortless Kitchen Cookbook. And so it's really healthy, easy recipes for weeknight cooking so that you're not in the kitchen forever. And it teaches people
another problem I have, too, with recipes, getting the ingredients here.
Mm. Well, hopefully.
Because, you know, what they're asking for. But then good cooks, I know, can make it out of whatever's available and still
adapt.
Yes.
Adapt. A lot of my dishes are inspired by other areas of the world. I'm not saying they're the official recipe, but you might be able to find some of the ingredients for those dishes in here. I don't use anything too crazy. So, maybe you'll try
like
something.
Like a bunch of kale or something.
There might be kale. There might be a lot of kale in here,
actually. I see some kale right there.
That's cilantro. But yeah, the
it's cilantro?
It's
okay.
Green.
All right, it's green. It looks like kale to me.
No, those are meatballs. Meatballs are my favorite. So my favorite section from the book is meatballs from around the world.
Okay.
And so a meatball can be found in any culture, and you just flavor that meat differently, and you're going to have...
That is so true.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me here.
Wow. The Effortless Kitchen Cookbook. Get your copy, but you can't have this one.
Nope, you can find it on Amazon.
Yes, you can find it on Amazon. Beautiful. After living here so long, for me, I find too much sauce in the food itself doesn't taste good. The vegetables aren't that good for me.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I'm used to tasting fresh vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And in Japan, you purchase food every day.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a big freezer that you put everything into and your meat comes out and you have to thaw it out.
Mm-hmm.
You get it fresh,
mm-hmm,
for the most part. Now, there are some things about Japan I can tell you later, but still, for the most part, you get really good food here.
Yeah, we can talk a whole other day about the food industry in the U.S. and how I feel it, how poor it is in terms of quality.
How do you get around it? Do you start your own garden? Are you doing that as well?
Well, I do have a CSA, so I share a spot in a garden. Well, I don't garden, so it's community-supported agriculture where you buy a share and then you pick up what they've harvested and then you get to pick in the fields for whatever's fresh that day. So I do that during the summer season. It's a 20-week season.
Do you have to supplement it anyway?
Yes.
Not a lot. Okay.
The challenge is you get what you get, right? So I can't go. It's not like going to the grocery store.
Right.
I get what's fresh. So then I have to cook from what's fresh,
okay,
which is better.
Right.
Not everybody loves it in my house, so.
They don't?
No.
But
I don't have a lot of kale eaters.
I want to ask who. Okay. So you get a lot of kale, you're telling me.
Especially, yeah, when you come into the season and it's, you know, we've just broken frost and, you know, we get all those hardy greens early on and then late in the season. So you kind of got to figure out what to do with those.
They say, Mom, come on, not a kale sandwich again.
Kale sandwich. There'd be a revolt. No kale sandwiches. No. So, I mean, I initially started the CSA because I wanted my kids, I've been doing it for years, I wanted them to see where food comes from, not from the grocery store, how the vegetables grow. It kind of backfired a little bit because we have a garden, there are bees, and my older daughter is afraid of bees. And so I would bring them, there are bees, and then that was it. She shut it down, not going again. So
had she ever been stung? Is that the reason?
At the time, no. She has been stung, and she's still afraid of bees.
Okay, right. Yeah. I understand. Okay. And explain, what is CSA?
Community supported agriculture.
Okay.
So there are farms that grow for their members. Mm-hmm. So you buy a share, and then they also do nonprofit work through the farm, and they donate what they grow as well.
So what are the activities outside of that? So what is this taking you into getting involved in this? What insights have you had that you didn't have before you got started doing this?
Oh, I think that what I've found from teaching people how to cook is that there's a lot of people out there who don't cook or feel like they can't cook, like more than I would have ever thought. Because for me, cooking is very intuitive. Like it comes easy and it's how I grew up. And there's a lot of people who were raised where a parent didn't cook. So they didn't learn or they didn't care to learn and didn't pay attention. And they start fending for themselves, and then they try recipes, and they say it's not good, right? The recipe's not good, so now I'm not good,
right?
And I can't do anything right in the kitchen.
Okay.
So what I'm teaching people is to cook for themselves, also to know how to fix things when it doesn't taste good, because not every recipe you find is good for you. It may be good for the person who wrote the recipe, or maybe not even. Maybe it's just a bad recipe, but. You know, if you're not comfortable looking at recipes and cooking from recipes, then you might think that it's all about you and I'm a terrible cook, and then you don't cook and it's a cycle, and then you order out and you eat fast food and all of those things.
So this is also a therapeutic class that you give to everyone as well. You give them therapeutic counseling?
Well, in a way,
I can't cook.
It's not you.
And I'm horrible.
Yeah, no, I truly believe that
and
people, everybody can cook.
Every time I taste whatever I make, it tastes horrible.
Right, and so I teach people how to adjust that.
Okay, because that's the problem I have. I've tried once.
Mm-hmm. This is what I hear, right? I've tried it.
That's just like exercise. Good. It's like anything. Motivation. Yeah. So you try breathing once.
Yeah.
Something you have to continually do.
Yeah.
And you'll get better with time.
Yeah.
I understand that. It's just having the desire to want to do it now. But I do want to surprise family one day because they've never seen me. And my sons have learned how to cook.
That's
because
great.
My wife's good. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She's good at doing it. Mm-hmm. Coming to this country and having to eat raw fish, mm-hmm. the texture, biting into it, felt like you were biting into a tongue or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that was hard to get over. But finally I got over it. It took me about a year.
But don't do it anywhere else, just here.
I only do it here.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I'm gonna go just home and just not eat sushi again.
No. Oh, you hadn't eaten it before?
No, I have.
You've had it here? Have you had
not
it?
Not yet, not yet.
Oh, okay.
Not yet. Yeah.
All right.
That's the plan.
You're for a treat.
Later today.
You're for a treat.
Yeah.
Don't just do it once, though. Do it a couple of times while you're here.
Yeah. I'm here to try all the food.
Yeah.
And so that's what I do is I bring people to places to also have that experience. Because it's so important to me. And I think that there are other people who really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So I lead culinary tours to Italy. And now we're going to Spain. And now I'm looking at Tokyo as a possible future one.
So Italy was your first.
Napa Valley was my first.
Okay.
Yeah, we did that one first, and then I branched out to Italy. I was just kind of waiting for COVID to die down and making people feeling a little more comfortable with traveling, international travel. So I did the domestic one first.
Okay.
And then
how many people were involved?
So I typically have, that one was a little bit smaller, about 8. But typically on the Italy ones, we've had 12 to 14. Our biggest one was 16.
No, you don't do this alone then, when you say we.
We is I'm leading it,
right.
And I bring people with me. So
okay.
The group is whoever wants to sign up for that trip. Like, I don't have a set group who comes. And I'm finding local people to help me plan the best curated experience that they can do. And, you know, they're on the ground. They know the people, because I can't find those people. We've done some really great, like, inside experiences that you couldn't just get if you went on a regular tour.
The time you're going to be here is 1 week. So do you have it all planned out?
Just the first 3 days.
Okay.
We wanted to have a solid plan. So we have a walking tour today, but it's private. So we were able to kind of put a food spin on it. And then we're doing a food crawl tomorrow.
What time is your walking tour today?
Noon.
Okay, good. You have time.
Yeah, we left
all
time.
Right.
Yeah.
You got that.
We're doing a sake tasting. We're doing a cooking class in a cooking school with Wagyu beef. So I'm excited. And then the rest of it, I don't know.
I
packed my hat and gloves all of a sudden right before I left. I'm like, what if I want to go see the snow monkeys? I don't know what I'm doing. I have 3 days to explore on my own. So
go see the snow monkeys. Debbie, before I end the podcast, there's a question I always like to ask everyone. If you could go back in time, knowing what you know right now, and meet the younger Debbie, what advice would you give her, and how old would she be?
Okay. So.
Oh, so you knew what I was going to ask anyway.
No, I didn't, but okay. Like, I know exactly how I'm going to answer, because this is like what I've thought about for a long time. So I reinvented myself at the age of 48. Doing something completely different than what I had been doing before.
So what were you doing before?
I was a CPA out of college. Right, okay. I was working in public accounting with KPMG, and I didn't love it. And I knew I wasn't going to love it, but that was my major in college, because I knew I can get a job, like the practical thing to do, right?
How many years did you do that?
10, and then I had children, and I was a full-time stay-at-home mom, which I never planned to do, which was great, but also mindless for me. And so this cooking thing was always there. It was always there since I was 17, and I didn't know what to do when I was picking a major for college, because I didn't want to be a restaurant chef and I didn't want to be a nutritionist. And what else was there at the time? Now there's so many options, right? You could do whatever you want to do. So my advice to my younger self is to, I won't use the Nike slogan, I'll say just go for it. You know, just do what you want to do, and don't have all of those thoughts of what if it doesn't happen, what if people don't want it. Just go for it, try it, and if it doesn't work, then figure out something else.
Beautiful, Debbie. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lance. It was great to see you.
I want to thank all of you for watching or listening to this podcast. And remember, it's all on loan, so continue to reach for the stars.
Because you're too blessed to be stressed.